Hi, hello, and welcome to the RBR.music podcast. My name is Steve Curley, and as always, I'm joined by our creator of the RBR.music Instagram page, Jordan Murray. Hello.
How do?
How do indeed. Where in each episode, in true RBR fashion, we're bringing you classic and new album reviews. It's our mission to cut through the noise to discuss the sound. So, as with a few podcasts already this season, we have put this one out to the vote, to you guys. We always like to hear from you guys, so this time we asked you to vote between two classic albums, and the winner would take all acclaim and be reviewed and discussed. We put Tom Petty's Full Moon Fevers album versus John Mellencamp's Scarecrow. Drum roll, please, Jordan Murray.
That's my very drums. Musical. Thank you very much. This is why I'm a critic and not a musician, because I'm bitter that I can't play anything.
So the winner, and a outright winner this episode with 68%, was Tom Petty. Sorry, John, it's Tom who's up this episode. So on the RBR.music radar this episode, we are going to be discussing Tom Petty's debut solo album from 1989, Full Moon Fever, an anticipated debut album from a much loved and enjoyed, already successful artist. Over to you, Jord.
Tom Petty, Full Moon Fever. So it came out of a most southern Californian set of circumstances. In November 1987, Petty, coming off his seventh album as frontman of the Heartbreakers, that was entitled Let Me Up, I've Had Enough, which was, it's a good album, but it just didn't sell that well. And I think they were exhausted from touring that album. And also in May 1987, there was an arson attack on Petty's house. Here, well, not when the house was burning down, but around this sort of time in May of 1987, he had a chance encounter with Jeff Lynne. And Jeff Lynne was the songwriter and producer of the Electric Light Orchestra. He met him at a traffic light stop and they got talking. So they got talking, and at this point in time, Lynne was just off producing George Harrison's Cloud Nine, the 1987 album that spawned the surprise MTV hit Got My Mind Set on You, and was at work on Brian Wilson's Let It Shine. So they got together and had... Tom Petty had a few songs, so he showed them to Lynne. And according to Tom Petty, Lynne had a few suggestions and really improved the songs. Then they ended up getting the Heartbreakers guitarist, Mike Campbell, going into his house and getting it all down in his studio. So before I forget, this is pre-Travelling Wilburys. So George Harrison was in the Travelling Wilburys, Tom Petty was in the Travelling Wilburys, and Mr. Lynne was in the Travelling Wilburys, Jeff Lynne, as well as Bob Dylan and who's the other fellow with the glasses? Can't even remember his name. Pretty Woman Walking Down the Street.
Oh, Roy Orbison.
Roy Orbison, see? That's just why I'm not a singer. I may cut that out. I may not. Depends how lazy I am. If you can hear this, I'm lazy. Okay, anyway. So, even at its most urgent, for me, Full Moon Fever has a very laid-back feel. It's got Petty's observations, his delivered in, his wizened drawl. It's coasted on loose-limbed riffs that were largely written with the rhythm guitar parts at the forefront of Petty and Lynne's collective mind. Every song was written on 12-string or 6-string acoustic guitars. The sun-soaked chords that open the sprawl-dwelling and regretful free-falling set the album's tone. This is 1989, this album came out, but for me it does feel pure mid-80s. Yeah. I suppose you've got to take your inspiration from somewhere. They tug the action along while Petty, half slyly and half wistfully, recounts the wounds suffered by a young woman who was focused on Elvis and horses before the allure of the bad boy creeps into her life regarding that song. So, as you like, Steve, most of the songs have a good story behind them, is my point.
Yeah, I do enjoy a story.
You do enjoy a story. Petty's love of rock, specifically his belief in its power to unite, is always in his catalogue, but on Full Moon Fever it especially shines. There are references to Elvis dotting the lyrics, a nod to Buddy Holly in the form of the smoothed out rave up the apartment song. And I also think there's a few tracks that does sound like if you put yourself in 1989, it sounds like a modernised version of a Buddy Holly song, some of these tracks. I also think it's humorous because CDs were just coming out. So I'll Feel a Whole Lot Better, which either kicks off side two of the album, if you spin the vinyl, or the tape, the cassette, or follows the petty narrated pause that the singer helpfully inserted for CD listeners who might not get the full experience of actually sitting with an album, paying attention to its nuances instead of letting it burble in the background. So, although I do think it's hilarious that he says it's now time to change the, flip the side over, and he addresses the CD listeners, he is pointing out, because the CD was so new then, is pointing out that every track has been thought through in this particular order. Because at first I just thought, like, I've got the CD, but I was streaming it, and I was like, well, that's weird. Why is it? That can't be on the CD, can it? And I put the CD on, and it is. Yeah. It is odd, but yeah, CDs were very new back in the day, and now pretty much forgotten about. So I mentioned Mike Campbell, the guitarist. He's now the guitarist in Fleetwood Mac. So this, and you pointed out, Steve, that this is Tom Petty's first...
His first debut album.
And you're right, you're completely right in saying that. It is his first debut album. But I think it's a solo album. It's kind of fuzzy one because Full Moon Fever is essentially in the same style as the Heartbreakers albums. Mike Campbell co-wrote two songs and co-produced the record. And he, along with Benmont Tench and Howie Epstein, all play on the album. However, the album sounds different from any Heartbreakers record due to the presence of former Electric Light Orchestra leader Jeff Lynne. It has that sort of, I don't know, sunshine feel. California sort of style. But Petty is roots rock. And I mean this in a good way. It's clean and glossy. It's layered with simmering vocal harmonies, keyboards and acoustic guitars. It's a friendly, radio-ready sound. And if it has dated somewhat over the years, the craft is still admirable and appealing. But the real reason Full Moon Fever became Petty's biggest hit is that it boasted a selection of songs that rivaled Damn the Torpedoes, which was his debut album with the Heartbreakers. Full Moon Fever didn't have a weak track. Even if a few weren't quite as strong as others, the album was filled with highlights. I Won't Back Down, The Wistful, A Face in the Crowd, The Rockabilly Throwaways, You're So Bad, and A Mind with a Heart of Its Own. The Birds cover, Feel a Whole Lot Better, The Charging Running Down a Dream, and Free Falling, of course. A coming-of-age ballad that could be Petty's best song. Full Moon Fever might have been meant as an off-the-cuff detour, but it turned into a minor masterpiece and spawned off a load of bands trying to emulate that song. This album, this sound, even today, you get bands trying to get that petty sound.
Yeah, so obviously whenever we touch on the classic albums and albums we all sort of know, and if you don't know, you'll have a bit of an understanding because they're not new. I actually hadn't listened to the album front to back for quite a long time. It was really nice to do it again. I concur with pretty much everything you've said with regards to the sort of sounds of... I thought there was a Beatles-esqueness to it as well.
Oh, yeah, there's one track that's really... I can't remember what it's called, but it's...
No, you're right. It's definitely... I heard it maybe in one or two, but there's definitely a Beatles-esque to it. I enjoy the symmetry that Tom Petty sort of has with someone like Bruce Springsteen, in the sense of like this arrangement to step away from his band. And we've criticised band front people going solo, and I think what we're actually criticising is maybe them doing it too soon, or, you know, not really any different or too different to what we're used to. I think this is a happy medium. It does sound very much as in line with his previous. I don't think there's a huge step away from that. However, it definitely has some things a little bit different, and that possibly is to do with the production and the extra sort of musical input from other parties. I think it's a really iconic album of that time. You are right, it does feel a bit earlier in its inspiration than 1989. There's definitely tones of mid-80s, kind of the softer rock. Obviously, Tom Petty himself, I don't know many people don't like Tom Petty or enjoy some of his music because he's so well exposed with certain tracks, which we'll come to later on. I think it's a really solid album. It's one for me that does sit in the classic sort of vinyl collection. It goes on fairly regularly, but broken up. I don't probably put it on solid. And that's not a disregard to the actual album back to back, because I do think it's sort of a really well put together album. It's the right length, it's the right sort of, you know, ticking of those boxes for an easy listen. I would have albums ahead of it as all time, but I know a lot of people probably have this album in their top sort of 10 or 20, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, probably top. I'm not dissing what you've said with this, but it would be in my top 100, or possibly top 50.
No, possibly. I agree. I agree. I just think, I mean, you're very eclectic in your volume of music, Jordan. I think it's easy for you and me to forget that. But I think this is a bit like, say, Exile on Main Street. It's an easy album to go to, isn't it?
It's definitely one of the classics. When you hear the term classic rock, this is classic rock, radio friendly classic rock.
Yeah,
it's just pure classic rock. It's not too heavy. It's not too out there. It's not too bluesy.
I actually think, George, I actually have a bit of an unpopular view on this, probably. I do think it wasn't Tom Petty doing it. I don't think it would be as acclaimed as it is and has been. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm dissing it, because I'm not. It does help it being Tom Petty. It's like Bruce Springsteen can put an album out and it will be received okay because it's Bruce Springsteen. And obviously, we're talking, a 15-year music career before this album was released for Tom Petty?
I get what you're saying, and I agree to an extent. But the songs, and it's not Tom Petty's fault, it's not the band's fault, the songs have been overplayed and overplayed and overplayed.
Yeah.
My point being is, if this is only good because it's Tom Petty, then it wouldn't last the test of time. It'd be too weak of an album. So there's certain songs that are strong.
No, I think maybe I've sort of misturned that. I, I, I don't mean it's not good in the sense it's just a good solid album, because I do believe it really is a good album. I just feel it has more notoriety and awareness because it's Tom Petty. I think if this album gets released at the same time by an unknown artist, it'll probably be picked up because it is quality. But as an established artist, you're always going to have a shelf of opportunity, aren't you?
Yeah, the opportunities that... Yeah, it might have been missed if it wasn't as popular as Tom Petty. And it's possibly a risk. It was a risk for Tom Petty to do, I think, because it's so radio-friendly. Because it's a rock band.
I mean, I'm referring to it with a slightly facetious point of view, but who am I to really argue against 5 times platinum in the US? Obviously, it's I think it sold, you know, stupid numbers and has clearly had the success it does deserve. I just sort of mean that a lead singer of a successful band will always have a more successful album because of their shelf life that they've had so far. I don't mean that.
Yeah, he doesn't really need to work for it because it's already established.
And I'm not saying he hasn't. It's just, yeah. Like, and I think one thing that we're going to come to shortly is this album has elements of absolute, complete and utter overplay. Like the deepest of overplays ever, I would say.
Yeah.
Which we'll come to shortly. But yeah, I think there's no denying Tom Petty, a legend. His death was very, very sort of sadly received across the world not that long ago. 2017, was it? I think it was 2017. I think
I saw him. I went to see him live, and I think that was his last.
Yeah,
his last British concert.
Yeah, sorry, I've got my notes here. 2017. However, weirdly. Yeah. They didn't actually, like the county sort of medical examiners in America, it took them till January, so October 17 to January 19, to actually give a formal kind of, delivery of reason for death, which was basically multi-organ failure. They
failure.
Was, I think a drug toxicity, I think is mixed drug toxicity is what it said.
Was it prescribed drugs or was it?
I think it's gone down as accidental overdose, which is a very common thing we hear from Newsly, the all-in-one super app for iOS and Android. How does Newsly work, I hear you ask? Well, it picks up the most trending articles on the web on topics that you choose, and at any given moment reads them out in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable and all in one place. Browse articles from topics that you choose and start playing. Stop scrolling and start listening. You can follow topics such as sport, tech, business, science, even music. They have a podcast as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 80 countries. Our podcast, the RBR.music podcast, is there too. I've started using it as my default podcast app, and they even have digital radio. So download and start using Newsly for free from www.newsly.me in the description. And if you use the promo code, that's RBRMUS, you'll receive 1 month free premium subscription. Go and give it a go. Sort of the music tainted soul backdrop, isn't it, sadly? But we do know lots of artists are pumped up, or were lots of artists pumped up on as much as possible to keep them going, because they were cash cows for themselves and others, weren't they? So yeah, exactly. But yeah, no denying, a legendary album, and an album that, again, it's probably one that I've probably listened to a lot more in its broken up pieces, because like we said, a lot of it is overplayed and a lot of it does appear on certain kind of, I always call them like travelling soundtracks, you know, car driving soundtracks. It definitely has that kind of, you know, traveling Bruce Springsteen vibe to it, definitely, in sort of, you know, pop America. So yeah, really enjoyed it. Happy to listen to it again.
My issue with this entire album is the overplay of it. We did put it on the Instagram stories to, it was up against John Mellencamp, Scarecrow, so the followers decided they wanted this album, which is perfectly fine. I like the album. It's good. But you cannot deny that it has been overplayed. You'll hear it in elevators, you'll hear it in supermarkets, you'll hear it in coffee houses. And that is because it's radio friendly, it's harmless, I suppose. Yet the stories are still good, the stories are interesting, but I find it hard to get hooked in, and it's not Tom Petty's fault or any of the producers' fault, it's just the overplay. So the opening is Free Falling, which I mentioned before, followed by I Won't Back Down. And I'm sure when this came out in 1989, that they were two absolute bangers. They were just amazing opening songs, just sets the tone perfectly for the rest of the album. For me, I can hear start of each song seconds into it, and in my head I've already played the song, I've already gone through the journey, and I just can't be bothered listening to it anymore because I feel like I know everything about it. It's because it's so overplayed. So the album for me now, and it might be something I have to address, but I probably won't because there's other albums to listen to. The album begins for me with Love is a Long Road, and I think that's a great track, because I skip the first two tracks. I don't even listen to them. I mean, I have for this podcast. I've put myself through the pain of it. And I say pain, the good tracks, but bloody hell, like, I've heard them time and time again, even when I don't want to be listening to them, they just seem to appear in adverts, in just everywhere. So that's my problem with the overplaying of it. Love is a Long Road, I think that's a great opening track, although it's not an opening track, it's the third song.
Okay, well, I think this point, it's really well timed to jump in at our very important star rating. Jordan spends a lot of time deliberating, studying, and trying to really understand where the RBR star rating delivers. And with this one, Jord, what are you saying?
With a critical eye or critical ear, forgetting what I said about the overplay, it did come out in 1989, so, you know, it's going to get played time and time again. But not quite sure any other album, or any, there probably is songs, but this always seems, unless my ears just pick up when these songs come on. Maybe it's just because it's a classic album and time has dealt it a rough hand with the overplay. Or Tom Petty's royalty check, it's not that much of a bad hand. And has it lasted the test of time? It does sound a little too 80s. There's bands now that are picking apart the best of the 80s sounds and making it work. Obviously, in hindsight, you can do that. When you're in the midst of it, I suppose you can't. But I'm just rambling. So 4.5 out of 5, I'd give this.
No, fair enough. And I think you mentioned that there's bands at the moment pulling the best of the 80s, and it is many, many decades ago now. We are both born in the 80s, and as much as we weren't that aware of what was going on, we know it and understand it and like it and dislike it for many, many different reasons. However, I actually think, in a weird way, this album has some of the worst things of the 80s on it. And again, maybe that's a credit to Tom Petty and other third parties involved. Like, they actually pull it off really well, but there are some really, like,
cliched things. But when it was happening, it wouldn't have been. I think it's...
I get it 100%.
Of the time, like, possibly cutting edge. No, not cutting edge at all, because you can hear Buddy Holly in there. You can hear the Beatles in there. He's cherry-picking what he's always liked from the 50s and 60s, I suppose. Like, bands now are picking out what they like from the 80s.
And we are talking 34 years ago. It's just looking back now, and maybe, you know, in 1991 we looked at this album very differently to how we do now, or 1989, or whatever it was around the time. I do completely get that. I just think there's a lot of 80s pumped into it. You've got to remember, in a very short movement after this album, this sort of album probably wouldn't have worked 2 years later. Because
I was just about to say that, yeah. The contrast of the Britpop of dance culture with the Stone Roses dance and indie and...
Well, grunge as well, kind of the movement of
grunge. Yeah. Because Guns N' Roses, although they, like the original lineup, started in the 80s and kind of fizzled out in the early 90s, all those sort of bands kind of were seen as dinosaurs. Yeah. And Guns N' Roses were like a young band, I suppose, at the time. But yeah, there was a lot. I think the 90s had so much going on within music. It can be compared to how fast the 60s was with the change of genres and early 70s. The 80s just seemed to be...
I feel
for me a bit of a stain.
So I was born in 84. So at the release of this album, I would have been 5, and then a few years later, as that 90s era appeared, as my popular culture became prevalent to me, as I was hitting 7, 8, 9 years old, wash denim 80s and Hairspray Flick was being taken away from us, and this album does definitely hold a sound. I'm not saying
it's like the last hurrah of the 80s, isn't it?
I think it is. And again, that
goodbye to the 80s.
It's a bookend for me of the 80s, and he's kind of thrown a lot of that. It's not a timeless album because it is stuck in the time that it belonged to. Some albums, you and I have talked about many, many classic albums.
They transcend time.
This doesn't, and that's fine. However, credit to, I've got my sister and brother-in-law, they are massive Tom Petty fans. They are both into kind of music scenes of our age and sort of, that sort of middle to late 30s. They love Tom Petty. They've seen him live a number of times as well. They do love it. So again, it is probably one of those. He is probably one of those artists that, a bit like you and Bruce Springsteen with your dad on previous podcasts, I think if he's been introduced to your family on the tape deck, on new CDs, as he jokes, I think he then will have that longevity. And this album is sort of doing that 14, 15 years after you first realised who Tom Petty was and who he could be. So I think 4.5 is very respectable. Classic albums are always harder to review because you're trying to review them of the time they belong and also now as a modern listener. So 4.5 from the RBR.music rating. Thank you, Jord. So feature two, we've actually slightly expanded this week because there's so many talking points within this album. We have the good, the bad and the rad. And actually, we also have a nod to feature as well. So let's start with the good tracks for you, Jord.
So the good track for me is what I consider the opening track, which is not the opening track, which is Love is a Long Road. I think it's a really impressive 80s track of its time, but it kicks the dust out of Free Falling, I Won't Back Down. It just kicks that away, and we're in for a decent ride with the rest of the tracks. Not to say the first two tracks are bad, it's just the facts that we've heard that time and time again. It's they almost sound, they're not folk songs, but they almost sound like it's not even Tom Petty. It's just part of culture now, those songs, if that makes sense. It's just they are what they are. They're just out there.
The single has sort of, yeah, it's sort of gone beyond Tom Petty being the writer and the performer of it. It's just,
yeah.
They sort of, they exist like, and this is going to sound wrong, but they exist like non, what do you call it? Like music that you can purchase for free, like Lift music or classical music you wouldn't necessarily have known. It just is there, isn't it? It's just, yeah.
Like, to like, you might disagree with this, but Seven Nation Army. By the White Stripes. That's kind of transcended that band. And what's the Led Zeppelin song? Stairway to Heaven. That's, I guess, most mega bands have one or two tracks.
I know it's not a barometer. I know it's not a barometer necessarily, but Spotify is always a good thing to refer to. I know it's kind of immature in the youth of music, if you get that, but Free Falling, for instance, and I Won't Go Back, are by far the most streamed and played tracks through Spotify from Tom Petty at all. I mean, we're talking, I think it's 563,873,776 plays for Free Falling. I mean,
so people, if they are listening to this podcast, will be switching off saying I'm wrong. But
well, no.
I'm sure there's someone out there that agrees that
I think that refers to it. I think that does nod to it. And obviously, I think we can all guarantee that most people who would have enjoyed a song like Free Falling, it will be on a multiple of CDs, record. It'll be around more than just digital streaming. So, okay, well, a good track. I love it too. I think it's a great track. Love Is a Long Road. It's got that really cool intro. It feels like it is a bit of a pre-banger as well. It's got that full kind of thud to it. Yeah, it's really, really good track. Well, a bad track then. We don't always like to find a bad track on a classic album, but we did on this one, didn't we, George?
We did. So it's Zombie Zoo. And the reason it's Zombie Zoo, so as much as the album was a mega well-selling album, I don't think it's entirely besotted with romance, rose-tinted glasses. Obviously not, because of the two opening tracks. Still good tracks. But Zombie Zoo, a drowsy kids these days lament, was inspired by Petty meeting punks who haunted a club of the same name. Petty's portrayal of the white lipstick little freaks is a bit condescending. He sings, "It's so hard to be careful, so easy to be led. Somewhere beyond the pavement, you'll find the living dead." The first sort of realization in the rock generation gap that would eventually become fodder for his public persona. He was counterculture at one point when he first started out with his long hair and, you know, the Heartbreakers. And now it's almost like, well, he's not scared of them, but he doesn't understand these punks, these freaks, these goths. And I'm like, you're making yourself look like a dinosaur. You shouldn't, that's what your parents should do. You shouldn't be taking the piss out of another movement.
Well, it's not actually that common to take this position as a musician kind of ages. Actually, what you normally find in some weird way, that the kind of the counterculture is continuously celebrated, even if it's to a point where, and I know you love them, but like, you see the Rolling Stones, you're like, oh, you know, let it go, granddad, sort of type sort of thing. I don't mean them, I mean like trying to be in with the in crowd. I do kind of respect Tom.
Yeah, I think the Rolling Stones got lost a bit in the 1980s, but then they came out as rock troubadours. I think Tom Petty came out as a rock troubadour.
My point was more to...
There's me defending the Rolling Stones.
No, I could have said anyone of aging kind of position. It's just normally you'll get the youth counterculture.
I would take it to heart.
Well, no. I mean the youth counterculture. Like, so normally you look at an aging artist or musician and go, oh, come on. Like, you know, you don't have to like everything new. So in a weird way, I don't mind Tom having a stance, but it's a bit ironic that probably on, yes, one of his most successful albums, it's also one of, like we've discussed, the most cliched time-stamped album that he's probably ever done, that he is sort of mocking what's coming next or what's been around him at the time. And I suppose, you know, it's his choice to deliver, well, it was his choice to deliver that, but I get it, because actually the track isn't poor. It's not a bad track. It's just we don't like the reason behind it, do we? That's what we're sort of saying. A guy who led a music industry many times is now knocking other people trying to do the same, and we don't like that, do we?
Yeah, I just think it's an odd thing for him to do. And he's got an extensive back catalogue, and I don't think he did it before, and he didn't do it since.
Yeah.
It's the last track as well, and it just leaves a bit of a bitter taste in my mouth of why are you talking about this or singing about this.
Perfect. No, I think you're spot on. That's our bad track, and bad for a depth of reasons, which I think is always nice to have. Well, okay, well, before we jump to the rad track, you did want to nod one track in particular, didn't you? Or
thanks for reminding me. So, yeah, thank you very much. There's a track on this, so when I'm not listening to the album on my headphones and it's like, you know, playing in the house, in the car, and I've got my little daughter with me, my younger daughter with me, every time, so she's been watching, let me set the scene, she's been watching, she's got hooked on the film Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the 1970s, well, don't even know when it came out, I think it was 1970s, with Gene Wilder, and the Oompa Loompas, the Oompa Loompa Loompa-dee-doo, I've got a story to tell, this is why I'm not a singer, there you go. So that was just to remind you. So every time the song Depending on You comes out, or gets played, Depending on You, she shouts out, it's the Oompa Loompa song, it's the Oompa Loompa song. And now I can't get that out of my head. So every time I'm by myself listening to it for this podcast, or just listening to the album just for the fun of it, Depending on You comes on, and I'm just seeing listeners, podcast listeners, if put Depending on You on and see if I'm right, or see if my daughter's right about it sounding like an Oompa Loompa song. And if she's wrong, keep that to yourself, because you don't want to let a little 2-year-old cry. Well, maybe you do, you harsh bastard.
Well, I was going to say, you can't argue with it, and I do like the fact that you have a song that makes you think dearly of your daughter, which is pretty cool too. Okay, well, our nod to is done and dusted. Let's go to our final featured track, the rad track. This is the track that normally gets people off their arses, having a dance, having a good old time. George, rad track, please, pal.
So the rad track is Running Down a Dream, and what are you talking about? We've talked about really is overplaying. Running Down a Dream probably has been overplayed as well, but for me, this has lasted the test of time. One of the few songs that probably has on this album. It's a strong album of its time. But Running Down a Dream, it really gets me wanting to dance, feeling good about myself. It's like the album itself. It's a richly realised presentation of the man behind the stadium headlining star. So this song, and just for me, encompasses the album of who he is and where he's at of that time.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're spot on. It's actually a really, really fun track. And I think sometimes music should be fun, lively, upbeat. It's got all of that. Has it been overplayed? I mean, you could argue that a lot of this album and many other classic album tracks are going to be overplayed, because that's why they're classic and they've been around, you know, a generation or more. So, yeah, absolutely. Our rad track this week, Running Down the Dream. Go and have a listen if you don't know it already. Well, Jordan, that was a pretty deep dive into the good, the bad, the rad, and a few little extras. So thank you for that. And to you guys, nice one, everyone, for listening. As always, we enjoy talking at you, and we hope you keep listening and enjoying our pod. Please do tell people about the rbr.music Instagram page, and wherever you do listen to us or follow us, please like, subscribe and share. It really does help our audience grow. We've had some amazing comments of late, and we really enjoy having you guys vote and throw an opinion at us and keep talking. So thanks for anyone who got involved in the poll too. Lastly, to Jordan's hard work, the rbr.music Instagram page has just hit 110,000 plus followers. So again, guys, thanks for keeping engaged. Jordan will keep his many, many hours of content throwing at you, music, opinion. You even get to see his pretty little face every now and again too. So once again, guys, thanks for listening and keep enjoying the rbr.music podcast and Instagram. Cheers, guys.
So, listeners, I've got a game for you to play. Go back and listen to this podcast, this episode, again. And every time one of us says overplayed, you have to take a shot of vodka. Have fun, kids!